Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
From ballquiz.com, Brendan.
Man.
Brent Hubbs joins us now. What's going on this morning?
Not much, guys. How are y'all? I'm not having near as much fun as you guys are.
Yeah, you never know what you're walking into with this group, for sure.
Oh, man, I got a great one for you. I just thought of it, too. I can't wait to ask you. Man.
Well, Brent, why do you think Alabama's... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I say it's got cha-ching written all over it, right?
Yeah, Brian? Yeah. Well, let me just ask you now before
right,
Andy starts.
Go right
I was going to ask you, do you think it should be right and legal for all reporters? Let's say you're covering Tennessee and you have a little insight on a little bit of injury history. Now that you can bet who's going to win a game, is that going to affect the media as well as just the players? We always asking about the players. But what about the media? I'm part of the media now. Can I bet and I know a little insight on the Titans?
Well, couldn't you bet before?
Right. But they may restrict me in the media.
Okay. I'm going to let my wife.
That's what we're talking about. I'm going to let my wife do all the betting.
Blaine, let me tell you how my world works, okay? I don't have a lot of money, and I love my money, so I'm not taking a chance on losing any of my money. So I don't know any gambling rules. I don't know anything about anything in gambling.
Yeah, me either. I'm not a gambler myself either.
He's got family and animals to feed.
I'm trying to get some good practice habits. If I just bet 200 and that turns into 500, then I'm like, oh, maybe I can do 1,000.
Yeah. In a related story, I saw a betting window in the press box at Churchill Downs, and there were reporters up there getting down on some races, but that's a whole different ballgame. I was going to ask you about this grad transfer, Brandon Kennedy. Why do you think Alabama's not budging on this? Is it the teams involved when you talk about Tennessee and Auburn, or why do you think they're so steadfast on this one?
I think it's Nick Saban's belief that, he doesn't want transfers turning into free agency, as he's claimed many times. Coaches don't like, they don't like the idea that a guy who was in their program last year may be competing against them this year and knows all their secrets of their blocking schemes and their defensive schemes and all these things. And, I think it's, when you look at guys and coaches who can jump around everywhere and go to different places, I understand you can't just turn the transfer rule wide open where any underclassman can transfer and be eligible immediately, because then you do create free agency. But at the same time, too, if a guy has gone to school for 3 to 4 years, has gotten his degree, has handled himself the right way, has done everything you ask him to do in terms of played on your team, gone into the classroom, got his degree, why should you have the right to restrict that guy from wherever he wants to go? I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to restrict him if he becomes a GA at that school and decides to give up football? I mean, he can go be a quality control analyst at your rival school, can he? So I don't really understand the idea that you can block a guy from playing somewhere. Here's where my frustration comes down on this whole rule. Somebody tell Greg Sankey and the fine folks in the SEC office, make a rule. And just black and white. You either can or you can't. Why are we putting this in the hands that a coach can block and then you can appeal a block? Okay, well, if you're going to uphold Nick Saban's decision that Brandon Kennedy can't transfer, what happens when a guy from Kentucky wants to leave? Are you going to let Mark Stoops? Well, what if you allow the Kentucky guy to transfer but not the Alabama guy? Well, then all of a sudden you're playing favorites in the conference. Nick Saban can do whatever he wants. Mark Stoops can't do what he wants. Make a rule. Stick to the rule. It's black and white. You either can transfer or within the conference as the grad transfer, or you can't. One or the other, and be done with it. It's time the SEC, they should have made a rule off of what happened with the Georgia kid or the Alabama kid that transferred to Georgia that had to win an appeal. I don't know why we have this gray area with this rule. Just make a rule and move on.
Well, a lot of people get unnecessarily bent out of shape over the Volunteers being a touchdown underdog in the early line against West Virginia in that season opener.
No, I don't think anybody, I don't think anybody is surprised by that line at all. I mean, this is a Tennessee team with a lot of question marks at a lot of positions, particularly on defense. It takes generally for this defense to get installed, it takes some time. You're opening up against a really good quarterback and a really good high-powered offense that scores a lot of points. So, no, I don't think anybody's surprised by that number. I think most Tennessee fans expected themselves to be a pretty significant underdog going into that game in Charlotte. So, again, I think, you know, Tennessee's in a world where they've got to prove it to a lot of people. Now, it's interesting, the Vegas line on the number of wins, since we're going to talk about gambling this morning, has jumped up. It was set, the over-under was set at 5.5 about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and it's moved up to 6.5, which I find a little surprising. I'm not sure where Vegas decided they found a win, you know, in the last 10 days, but somewhere the Vegas odds makers found another win to set the betting line. But I don't think Tennessee fans were surprised at all by that notion that they're underdogs against West Virginia.
Well, Brent, I don't know if this will help the line, but I know they were talking about renovation of Neyland, let alone some other athletic facilities. Where is Fulmer and Brass at on renovation of some of the stadiums, athletic stadiums?
Well, I mean, baseball has to get fixed. The question is, what's realistic to fix baseball? You know, you're not. Coach Fulmer has made it clear he's not going to demo that stadium and just completely build a brand new one. So, what is realistic that you can do? I mean, do you reconfigure the way the park's laid out? Do you add, you know, try to add some outfield seating? I mean, what can you do to upgrade that facility? That's the one facility on campus where Tennessee's behind the rest of the conference. Tony Vitello, Tennessee's first-year baseball coach, really overachieved with his team. I know they came up short of making the SEC tournament, but the fact that the last weekend mattered in terms of the SEC tournament hopes for them, he did a nice job in year one. They've still got a long ways to go, but he did do a good job there. So they've got to upgrade there. I think the bigger question everybody wants to know is, what's Philip Fulmer's plan for Neyland Stadium? Back in November, John Curry presented his plan for the renovations to Neyland Stadium at the tune of nearly $400 million. He got approval from it from the Board of Trustees and the Chancellor and the President's side. The reality is, John Curry's gone, the Board of Trustees are wiped out, the Chancellor's gone, and the President's heading out the door. So everybody who signed off on that's no longer here. And Coach Fulmer has said, you know, kind of slowing his roll down. He wants to look at some things and make sure, you know, what's needed, what's not needed, what's feasible, phase one, phase two, you know, et cetera. So that project's on a little bit of hold. It's not wiped off the table, but I think he's going through and trying to evaluate what makes sense, not just for now, but for the, you know, 30, 40 years down the road from a fan experience standpoint. So it'll get worked on. It's just not going to go at the pace that it was originally going to go at. The other project going right now is Tennessee's last addition to the practice facility, the Haslam practice field, is being in the process of being completed. They're getting ready to put up the outdoor lights for that new 100-yard field, and they're getting ready to sod that field and should be in play for guys to work out on later this summer and certainly be a factor this fall. That'll give Tennessee 3 100-yard practice fields to work off of, which is a far cry from the less than 200 yards of practice fields that Tennessee had in the 90s when Coach Fulmer was winning SEC titles.
Well, Brent, I noticed this Pruitt's first caravan. I know they stopped through here. Any breaking news or anything of conversation on the caravan and how he likes it and all?
Well, I mean, I think he would rather coach, you know, he would rather, and that's not a knock on the fans. I mean, he's been great to interact with the fans. You know, it's part of what you have to do and part of the process. And, you know, he's been at every stop and he's been very engaging at every stop with individual fans have come up to him. But I mean, he's ready. I was with him last night in Atlanta and part of the conversation in Atlanta was just talking about recruiting North Georgia and recruiting the state of Georgia and how important that is for Tennessee, but you could tell in visiting with him, he's ready for two things. One, he's ready to get back into the office all the time. And two, he's really ready for his team to return to Knoxville after a three-week break and ready for the newcomers to get in and create that competition. That's what he's most interested in seeing this morning, or not this morning, but getting back to the office to get to work. They've got one more stop Thursday night in Tri-Cities, and they'll be done from there. And I think it's been good. He's had a good time interacting with people, but he's ready to get to the summer workout program and really start to build his football team. And he really believes this group of signees is going to bring a lot more competitiveness to areas. And, you know, typically coaches like their own guys, and these are all his guys that he recruited. So it's going to be interesting to see who factors in early, who creates the early buzz when they get here this summer.
No doubt about it. It seems like he's getting a little hot on the recruiting trail there with some signees, some JUCO guys, and some other guys. I guess, how do you think it's going?
I think it's going well. I mean, I think they're doing well considering they haven't played a game yet. And he hasn't coached a game as a head coach. And what's paying off for them is in the state of Georgia. When you look at even the JUCO commitment that they just got, the linebacker, he's a Georgia native. I think five of their last six commitments have come from the state of Georgia, if I'm not mistaken. And so they're really working the state. And that's where they have the most ties. When you look at Will Friend has coached in the state of Georgia. Kevin Shear has coached in the state of Georgia. Chris Rump has recruited the state of Georgia for South Carolina, Clemson, Florida, and Alabama. They've got a lot of ties to the state. And that was by design by Pruitt when he put that staff together. To have a lot of SEC ties, particularly in the state of Georgia, and it's paying early dividends for Tennessee. And I tell you, another state they're working really hard. They've not got the fruits of that labor yet. That's in the state of North Carolina, but they have a chance, I think, to land three or four guys over there before this class is over with at the end of the year. And that's an area that they've targeted really hard to recruit, particularly in the Charlotte area. So I think recruiting, considering they were winless in the conference last year, you got a coach who's yet to coach his first game as a head coach. I think they've done well in this month. And June will be interesting from a camp standpoint and kind of who emerges as new targets for them and who emerges as more priority targets for them. That's kind of coming up next on the recruiting trail for Tennessee.
Brent, I don't believe we had a chance to ask you about your thoughts on the passing of Mike Slive and any personal remembrances you had with him.
You know, the thing about Commissioner Slive that I quite frankly don't think he probably will ever get enough credit for, because it's perceived by a lot of people that he inherited such a great situation because of what Roy Kramer did for college football in general with the establishment of the conference championship games, which was the precursor to the playoff. But what Mike Slive did in the SEC from a financial standpoint, It was the envy of everybody else in the country. You know, I remember when the SEC network came about and the Big Ten network was going and they were going to do their own subscribers and they were going to do their own kind of their own thing and create it that way. And when Slive partnered up with ESPN, everybody was kind of like, wait a minute, it's a long-term effect. I mean, there's big money on the front end, but is that going to pay dividends down the road? Is he making the right decision? And as it turned out, he absolutely made the right decision. And the result of that is everybody else in the country has been trying to create their own network the same way with the same partners if they can. Where he elevated this league was not just the competitiveness. He elevated it financially, which turned it into a whole different level of competitiveness. The cost of doing business in this league right now is higher than it's ever been, and that's a byproduct of the financial windfall that he brought to this conference that's really unprecedented. And I don't know that he will ever get enough credit from a business standpoint of doing what he did to take the conference to a different financial status than anybody else has around the country.
Brent, what is remarkable to me, and you know this better than anybody, is how tribal the SEC is, but how the respect for Slive was unanimous. You know, that there were, you know, everybody sort of bowed to him, in a conference where they're, as you know, backbiting rivalries and everything else.
But during his time, and this is again a credit to him, but there wasn't a recession, so to speak. There wasn't anything bad. Yeah, I mean, you dealt with some, potential probation stuff and all those things. But you weren't rocked with major scandal across the board while he was there. No question they had issues. I'm not saying they haven't in this league. But again, I mean, when you look at where everybody was as a program financially, the resources that were there, when he took over, they were good. where they were at when he stepped away was unfathomable. And so the result is, yeah, there's backfighting. Yeah, those guys are this. But everybody got in the room with Commissioner Slive. He did one thing. He said, this is what we're going to do. And he was very stern in that. But everybody said, okay, because it all ultimately seemed to benefit them. You know what I mean? They had more money to pay coaches. They could build bigger facilities. There was bigger slices of the pie coming in. So the decisions he made were fruitful for the individual institution. And as a result, all the institutions got on board because it was all ultimately going to benefit them individually as much as it was going to benefit the conference. And again, I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. It's probably not talked about enough by a lot of people.
Brent Hubbs, great as always. Thanks, man. We'll catch you next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.